And I have with me on the line Rabbi Galperin.
How are you, Ilan?
I am fine. How are you, Rabbi?
Baruch Hashem. Thank God. How was your Shavuot?
Shavuot was nice. We had a service in Congregation Beth El. It was beautiful. And we ate a lot of ice cream and cheesecakes, and we did that part of the mitzvah. We did it the good way.
Beautiful, very nice, very nice. Yeah, I love Shavuot. It was all the dairy foods and everything.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid, it was always a big deal if you had relatives in a kibbutz or a moshav. Then they had like a parade with tractors decorated with fruits and vegetables and dances. It was beautiful.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And it's still like that now in kibbutzim.
Wow, beautiful. Very nice.
Yeah. So Parashat Naso.
Yep. You know, we talk about in Parashat Naso the completing of the headcount of the children of Israel, which was taken at in the Sinai Desert.
Yeah.
So it came to the total of a little over 8,000 Levite men between the ages of 30 and 50 who are going to be doing the actual work of the transporting of the tabernacle. Now God communicates as well to Moses the law of the Sota, which is the wayward wife suspected of unfaithfulness to her husband, as well as then, you know, it goes into the whole remedies and all that halachot laws in regards to how do we find out if she really did or if she didn't. But he also talks to Moses about the giving the law of the Nazir, the Nazirite who forswears wine, and what he does is he lets his hair grow long, and it's forbidden for him to become contaminated through contact with the dead body. It's very interesting about the Nazir. But it's brought down that, obviously, the mightiest man in the Bible was, of course, Samson. And, you know, he took on the most savage of beasts. You know, he wasn't afraid of anyone. He went head-on with anyone with no issues. And he was a very, very hard, you know, a tough block to crack. And he was mighty, he was big. Everyone was scared of him. And in the end, Samson was undone by a haircut.
Yep. You
know, Delilah cut his hair, and he lost his strength. And the question is asked, is that why should such a small little thing of him cutting his hair, that it stopped him of his strength? He lost everything. And the answer is that obviously Samson was a Nazirite. As we read in this historic portion, that about the sacred vow of the Nazirite precludes him from cutting his hair, coming into contact with the dead, and drinking wine. So even though he was this mighty giant, this mighty of a man, one of the things that he took upon himself was that he was not going to touch his hair, and that's what made him into a Nazirite. So by her cutting his hair stripped him of that power. Now, generally the way that it works is that at the end of the Nazirite person's period, there were certain atonement offerings he needed to bring to the temple. And the Talmud, the Gemara, asks, why should a Nazirite, who essentially had taken upon himself voluntary prohibitions beyond the letter of the law, you and I are not required not to drink wine, not to touch our hair, not to come in contact with the dead. No one is. So therefore, if he takes it upon himself, he's doing beyond something even better. So why should he be required to seek atonement? What sin did he commit? And one of the Talmudic opinions explains and suggests that the fact that he denied himself the pleasure of drinking wine is considered sinful. Considered sinful. The Talmud asks, says, what is that supposed to mean? Why is it wrong to deny oneself anything? Just because the Creator allows us to enjoy the fruit of the wine, is it wrong if I decline not to enjoy it? Will I really be held accountable for every product that bears the kosher certification, which I choose to do without? I choose not to eat it. Just because a popular ice cream was recently approved by the kosher authorities, am I a sinner for not eating it? doesn't make sense. So the Gemara asks, we need an explanation. Why is it that he is desperately in need of some atonement for the fact that right when he finishes during the Nazirite period of time, which this was something that he took upon himself involuntarily, not that he was commanded to do it.
Yeah.
So the answer would appear has more to do with the attitude towards this issue than the blatant inequity. Because what is the right way to live? What should be our approach to God's creation and the material world? Do we need to divorce ourselves from society in order to be holy? Do we need to reject anything that isn't holy or spiritual because we fear that it may interfere with our piety? And people have that question. People have that issue. And there are ideologies which preach that that we have to, we have to really take ourselves away from the grind, our daily grind of worldly activity. And they see the body as unclean, and marriage is as a less than ideal confession to human frailty. Then there are some people who climb mountains to escape to the spiritual realm. You hear these backpackers and people that are looking for spirituality, they go try and climb to the mountains of the Himalayas or here or there, trying to get
to break records.
Right. Well, yeah, but even that, to try and get more spiritual, the higher up, they're thinking maybe I'm going to get more of a spiritual life. And, the heavens are far more beautiful than the street corners and alleys of city life. So let me climb to higher mountains. I'm going to be in the middle of the heavens. And it'll be beautiful. I'll get a very spiritual high. That's where a lot of people have an ideology like that. However, Judaism sees it differently. Because we follow neither rejectionist nor escapist theologies. Because we embrace and engage God's world. Now, of course, there are clear guidelines, even with the rules and regulations. However, but within the Torah framework, we should work. We're obligated to work with the Almighty's universe. Because, it says, in the beginning God created heaven and earth. Earthness is also part of His vast eternal plan. That plan is the earthly beings, men, women, that we should invest our time and energy, our wealth and our wisdom, to infuse the material realm with godliness. Not to run away from the world, but to get involved in the world. But obviously, in the framework and the guidelines and regulations of what the Torah allows us and does not allow us to do.
Yeah.
Now, every mitzvah, every commandment, we do achieve just that. Because we take the physical and we transform it to the spiritual. Not by breaking it or running away from it, but by confronting it and molding it into something sacred and purposeful. When we eat meat, for example, we're elevating the spark, the hidden levels of spirituality for the physical being of the cow by us eating it and making a bracha, making a blessing. We're elevating it to a higher level. Now, people think that Jews have, they send their kids off to day schools or yeshivas, and they're sort of hidden, and they're in this little bubble, in this cocoon. As the proverbs go, Jews have no nunnery. A yeshiva is meant to be not a monastery, but a school which will teach and train students to create spiritual value within the material world. So, coming back to our issue, of the Nazarite, why does he have to ask for forgiveness? What sin did he do? So the Nazarite, who became of his own moral weakness, found it necessary to distance himself from that which the Creator permitted us, is somewhat sinful. Because, and his attitude does need to and requires an atonement. Because Judaism calls upon us to live a higher and, otherworldly life within the world. Rather than allowing the emptiness of society to bring us down, we are challenged to, on the other hand, insist on changing our society for the better. So even though the Nazarite took upon himself something more of a voluntary basis not to have wine, because he thought that he did not want to have anything to do with worldly matters, so that part of it was a sin. It was somewhat sinful. Because we are obligated to get involved in the world, in the realms and in the guidelines of the Torah, to be part of the creation of the world. God created the world as well in his plan, not only us human beings. And that's something that we can take a very important lesson. Yes, you know, I think it's important. Drink wine, say kiddush, say l'chaim, whatever it may be. But we always have to constantly remember that we can take something from Nazareth. That we should not only, we should get involved in the world. We're required to get involved in the world. But we have to make sure that the world doesn't take over our lives and doesn't become that our whole life is the world and the Torah and mitzvah and the commandments become on the back burner and the world becomes the main thing. It's the world, the Torah and the mitzvah, they can all become one. And we can elevate the world based on if we have the right moral values of what the Torah asks us to do. And that is something very important that we can learn from the Nazarite.
That's nice. And the Shabbat services at the congregation, at Shaarei Tzedek, sorry.
Shabbat services is moved up a couple of minutes, so it's 7:15 Friday evening, and Shabbat morning 9 o'clock, and Sunday morning we have Minyan as well as the Shah HaShemayim, followed by breakfast at 8:15, open to the entire community.
That's great. So Rabbi, I wanted to wish you Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, you too, and you should have a good and blessed week.
Thank you.
Be well.
Be well.
Bye-bye.